Hey, welcome to Blue Wire. After you finish listening to this awesome Blue Wire podcast, make sure you check out the other pods in our Blue Wire family. Okay, I know, you're probably wondering, how do I do that? Well, it's simple. Go to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and search Blue Wire. Ta-da! They will all be there, so have fun listening.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cavs are wrapping up their season. There's just 2 weeks left of the regular season. It feels weird to be finishing off the year this early, but if I'm being perfectly honest, a bit of a break is pretty welcome. Back from his break, though, is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez, no longer dying. So happy to see that. How's it going, Matt?
I'm good. I don't sound like Chops sounds on every single podcast anymore. So
what a good. What a great, great segue you set up there.
Happy to help.
And that segue, of course, is to the man that's probably responsible for creating the monster of at least myself.
Me too.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, helped bring on Carter and has been a big part of our growth in Cavs coverage, Cavs fandom. David Zavak from Fear the Sword. How's it going, man?
Hey, good. And the door is locked, and my dog does not have a functioning squeaky toy, so no worries.
I thought you were still talking about the metaphorical door you opened for us into Cavs Twitter. So I was like, door is locked. Where is he going? Yeah.
Well, I just started watching Game of Thrones in the last week, I made it to the Red Wedding, so now I'm thinking door's locked. I'm just assuming that David's going to fire us on air, which I'd really that would bring everything full circle.
I don't know if I can do that. We'll have to talk to Chris.
I think if you made your case strong enough, Chris would listen. He's that kind of guy. So you're in. Justin, you're a Thronesman now. Anyone who makes it that far, I feel like, is typically in.
Man. Yeah, I'm in. To me, part of why I didn't want to jump into it right away was because I kind of wanted to see how it wrapped up. Because I'm still...
Yeah, there's always that impulse.
I mean, I remember people were giving me a lot of shit back in the day for not watching Dexter. And then apparently...
Terrible.
Yeah, I never watched a single episode of it, and I saw how people reacted to the end, and I'm like, well, if I'm going to invest that much time, I kind of want to know if it's going to be worth it in the end, but I wanted to catch up to so I can share in the experience with everybody else.
Because that is a thing that people do very, like, they'll just throw out, like, they'll be so mad at you if you haven't watched a TV show, and it's like, well, it's 50 hours.
It's a lot of commitment, man. I'm scared of commitment. I'm okay with it. It's one thing to like commit in marriage, but it's another thing to commit 50 hours to a TV show.
I had so much easier time committing to marry Kylie and spend the rest of my life with her than I have been able to commit to watch The Wire.
Fair enough.
Marriage is easy in comparison.
Speaking of wasting time on mindless things, March Madness is going on right now. David, I know you had mentioned that you watched a little bit, that you were following along with Ohio State. How is there anyone since March Madness has started that has kind of changed your opinion with their play or kind of the reaction you've seen? Because for me, I know I watch a bit of college, but then I'll go to like I'll try to find out what Trevor Magnotti is saying or Sam Vecenie, like guys that I value their opinion. So is there anything from this past weekend that's kind of changed your opinion on any of these prospects?
I think the Duke players not named Zion Williamson have taken a little bit of a hit. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that, but just from what I've seen people saying and from what you've seen just in terms of the results, I don't know if RJ Barrett has really done a whole lot to help his case. I see people talking a little bit about him having tunnel vision. I've seen some people pointing out some effort type issues. People obviously went crazy about Ja Morant's first game. you know, I tend to think that, like, you know, by the time the draft would have came around going into the tournament, I think RJ Barrett probably would have been able to work himself back up to that number two spot, just because that's where he started and people kind of talked themselves back into that. But
right.
I would guess that for a lot of people, Morant would be higher than Barrett right now.
Yeah, I Morant just kind of felt like the guy. Like, I mean, I think we'd all kind of been excited by him all year. And he plays the kind of basketball on a team that kind of lets him play the kind of basketball we like to see. Like, floor general, attacking, scoring in the paint, scoring from three, you know, all that stuff. But he also is just the ultimate guy. Like, that kind of player always helps himself in the tournament.
I think just, you know, and there's been, like, this move more recently towards, like, guys who just look the part end up sort of being pretty good, right? Like, I mean, Trae mm-hmm. Young last year in college just looked great, but you kind of said, well, you know, is he big enough? Is he strong enough? And you know what? Now he's in the NBA and he's still sort of doing those things. And to make sort of a cross sport comparison, Baker Mayfield, it was sort of like that at Oklahoma, but everybody was kind of like, well, Big 12 quarterbacks, you know, they never really have done it. But you know what? His accuracy numbers were insane. And he went and played for the Browns and he looked pretty good. I feel like Morant and then also now Kyler Murray are kind of like really testing that, right? Like, Morant looks so good, but he is not a freshman. He is playing against, you know, not the best competition. I'm kind of just curious to see, you know, because, I mean, Derek Williams looked the part, you know, in that games before. So, I don't know. That's what makes this fun, but it also makes it tough.
Yeah, I saw a good thread. I'm going to butcher the name, but longtime reader at Fear the Sword, someone that I really do respect his opinion, Eustachio Rawley.
Close enough.
Yeah, it's... I'm terrible with pronunciation, so that's...
Maybe Eustachio? Eustachio?
It's Eustachio, but he just goes
I wouldn't have imagined it would be pronounced like pistachio, which I think is Justin's.
he just goes by Alex.
There you go. But he had mentioned that Marquette was one of the top three defenses that Morant has played all year, and Marquette isn't a very good defensive team. And I think it's worth noting, as David mentioned, that this is his second year in college. Last season, he was averaging about 12 points per game, didn't look like anything special, and he is facing weaker competition than some of these other guys. And, I mean, against Florida State, things kind of unraveled for him a little bit. He shot 8 of 21 from the floor, only 4 assists. But I think what he's done, I think he's kind of elevated his game to that tier after Zion, which is probably, let's be honest, like about two tiers down. I don't think any prospect after Zion is actually a tier below. I think it's a bigger drop off than
tier
that.
Tier 2 is empty and tier 3 is where Morant. Now, do you think Morant lies on his own tier? Because I don't
know. No. But I'm saying is he's put himself in the same tier as like RJ and maybe some other guys, depending on where your opinion is, to the point where you're going to draft more for fit. Like, I think if Chicago or Phoenix, teams that do have a lot already invested on the wings, I think if they end up with the second pick, you can see them take Morant, whereas guys like RJ or Culver are more likely to go off the board if it's a team like Cleveland that has at least something invested in Colin Sexton. I'm still not super high on Morant, especially as a fit on this team, just because he's not a great shooter. He lacks a lot of strength. And there's also just the Westbrook thing of kind of his decision-making that kind of throws me off. I've just never been huge around that type of player. And for me, I don't know about you guys, but the guy that my opinion has probably changed on the most is Culver, especially now that I'm seeing that he's taken kind of this Paul George-like growth spurt to 6'9". I think he's my guy after Zion right now, as much as I'd love to have RJ.
I'd like to say that my opinion changed on Culver, but I hadn't watched him. You got to be honest.
Okay, I had watched.
If you can believe it, I hadn't tuned into a lot of Texas Tech.
Well, here's what I do. I watch
I watch YouTube highlight reels. All right.
Yeah, I didn't even do that. You got to be honest. The thing with Culver is, yeah, like he's listed 6'5", and there's just no fucking way. This dude is at least 6'8". I mean, he towers over everyone. I mean, I feel like if there's anyone who the combine matters most for, it's Culver, you know? Yeah. 'Cause like, you know, if he's 6'5", I get having him listed 6'7", 8" on mock drafts. But if he's 6'9", 6'8", which, I mean, he really looks that big. I mean,
he looks it, yeah.
Am I crazy here for thinking he's that big? I actually, again, had not been watching.
He's listed at 6'5".
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, like, I was watching for pretty much the first time. I'd seen a few highlights, but like very marginal, and I was like, is that their center?
He's big.
Huge. And I'm just like you know, I don't know anyone who has a more important combine other than honestly maybe Zion, you know, like,
but even Zion, like Zion's probably like 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah, well,
it
like
doesn't Zion matter
can cause... only just like raise his ceiling. Like our opinion on his ceiling might change a little bit depending on Zion's, but he's still going one, obviously.
Right. The only thing that it might, the only thing it might change is if his wingspan makes you think that he's going to be capable of playing the five at some point.
Yeah. But I think they're going to try him there anyway. Yeah.
Like, I think this will sound smart, but then I'm going to put a qualifier on it. I mean, Culver has doubled his assist rate this year and his turnover percentage has like barely changed. Like, that is exactly what I would like to see. And I am like to a point, and maybe it's just like Wiggins and Barnes, you know, just, you know, PTSD or something. But like, you know, these guys that don't play with vision in college don't really develop it.
Right.
I mean, vision does always feel like one of those things that you either kind of have it or you don't. And, you know, just watching those two Culver games. You know, these really sharp skip passes to the weak side corner from the opposite wing against an unset defense, like that's the kind of smart plays that most college kids don't play, especially guys who, you know, I mean, Trevor talks about him not being a very comfortable lead ball handler. I mean, if he's able to do that, then, you know, maybe you can project some growth there, because he really is able to pass the ball at least at a decent level. And the jumper, I think that's going to take some work, but you know, the size, the defensive potential, and he does work defensively. Man, he just looked so good. I kind of can't believe that he hasn't gotten more hype over the last couple days.
Yeah. I mean, I keep looking at mock drafts and they have them available at like 6 and 7. And I know Trevor's been on it all year saying that he's in that second tier and he's either the second or third best prospect in this draft. But I mean, if he's a guy that his value stays that low, and if the Cavs do fall back, like, I'd be over the moon if we fell to, let's say, 5 or 6 and ended up with Culver. David touched on this a little bit, but I do have some kind of reservations with the way that RJ's playing. I think some of it's overstated. I think there's frustration when you watch Duke, because anytime Zion doesn't touch the basketball, everyone loses their minds. But realistically speaking, this is a team that has 5 guys starting that cannot shoot a basketball. Like, Cam Reddish is the best shooter on the team, and he's scared to shoot, and he shoots 33% when he does. Yeah, I'm completely out on Cam Reddish. RJ is a slasher, which that's never a good thing in college to begin with. Forget when you have no one that can shoot a basketball. And Zion, I mean, I think RJ and Zion are going to look a lot better when they go to the NBA and they have NBA spacing. RJ added weight coming into the season at Duke. I think he's going to do that again this year. And I'm still struggling on how to read this season, just because it has been such a deviation of how I've seen him play on other levels, whether it be Team Canada or just any other exhibition.
Never seen him get outshined before. I think that has been more of a factor in the way we talk about RJ than anything else, is that he is so much worse than the guy who he plays with every day.
Right.
And it makes him look shitty. I really think that. I think everyone on Duke looks kind of marginal by comparison because Zion has been such an insane outlier.
Right. And if you were on a team where it's kind of built more around his strengths, maybe he would have been displayed a little bit better. But it also just reminds me so much of Jason Tatum at Duke, who put up very similar numbers, had very similar issues, and was used in an, I guess, incorrect way. Like, I don't think any of these guys have been used well at Duke. And
it's weird how Zion never plays pick and roll.
none of them do. I mean,
it's just such a college thing, man. I hate college coaches.
I saw somebody say, like, oh, they should do a RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson pick and roll. And I was like, wait, are they not Duke?
No, they don't. They don't at all. Like, every time they ask RJ to create, it's in isolation. And sometimes they even have a center posting up while he's trying to isolate. Like,
I've got a hot take. Yeah, yeah. If I see Marquise Bolden post up on the strong side of one more RJ dribble drive, that guy sucks, man. He did something like marginal on the court. And I forget who it was. One of the commentators was like, you know, he's going to be a player at the next level too. And then the other commentator was like, yeah.
That's one thing I do love about this time of year. And I did a little bit of it earlier. But just everyone acts like they're an expert on 65 teams. And it's just absolutely impossible.
Yeah, everyone was like, the other guy was like, clearly, like, he's not going to be a pro. I wonder if this is venturing into the land of takedom, but here we are. I wonder if the reason most college coaches don't run pick and roll is because they can't pretend that, you know, running a pick and roll heavy offense means you can't pretend that you're doing as much as you're doing.
I love that take. They're not running
your system and running your cuts and running your plays every single possession. Then you can, you know, you can pump yourself up and pretend you've got a ton of control. Whereas in the NBA, it's just like, go get points as efficiently as you can. And it doesn't matter how.
Yeah, this is designed to help the Matt Moores of the world being like, you know, it's such a pretty offense. It's not efficient, but you know what? It's good team basketball. Whereas when Ty Lue would run Kyrie LeBron pick and rolls that generated isolation, sure, it's great, but I just don't like how it feels. David, I got a question for you. So I think we're all in agreement that the Cavs aren't at a point where they should be drafting for fit. Like, you should take the best player available, and maybe if you're split on two guys, you draft towards fit. Do you really think they should be prioritizing a guy that can kind of be a lead ball handler, whether it be on the perimeter or at the guard position alongside Sexton with Morant, or if Jared Culver is just a good secondary creator, for example, is that someone that you think fits, or would you kind of lean more towards someone that can really dominate the basketball?
I don't really care. if the team is
all right,
like,
good pod.
Yeah, I know. Like, I know. I think, you know, if the team really believes that Colin Sexton is, you know, has it within him to become like a pure point guard, I don't see that right now. So, you know, a secondary ball handler or a lead ball handler like Morant, I don't think that's like a problem. But if they don't do that, you know, then obviously that opens things up. So I think I'm generally speaking best player available. But if they really love Colin Sexton that much, and it's enough that they would say, well, you know, we love Morant, but we don't feel like we need that it's kind of like you have this big scouting staff, you have, you know, you have your GM, you have your analytics staff, you know, make your best decision on what you have and what you don't have. You know, my take on Colin Sexton 2 months ago was, you know, pretty off compared to where he is right now. So does that mean he's figured it all out? No, I don't think so. But generally speaking, take whoever you think the best player is. But you know, they might see something in Colin Sexton that I don't.
Hey, Zavac, you don't get to talk about Colin Sexton after all the stuff you said about him earlier in the year.
You know what? Pointing out what he was currently doing means that you can't make observations when he changes things. The funny thing is, I don't know if they necessarily need Sexton to be a pure point guard. I think that's kind of an antiquated notion to begin with, and that's just not his skill set. But the Cavs are kind of in a funny position where you do have a lot of guys that can provide secondary playmaking, like Kevin Love can, Jetty Osman can, Sexton can do it at times, Larry Nance can at times. And I think if you just have an offense where there's a lot of guys that are able to create for themselves or each other, I kind of don't hate that as a direction for the team, but there does need to be an established hierarchy that, okay, it's late in games. We need this guy to create because we know he can do it reliably. Where if you don't have that, I think you start to get into the Nuggets type of offense where it's great over the course of the regular season, but when it comes down to crunch time, it's a bunch of guys that don't know what to do.
I typically agree with that. I think there's more risk in taking Morant than the best player available folks would tell you. Just from the perspective of, like, I hate to do this, but like the Deion Kyrie thing, and like, yeah, Deion was kind of a mess and, like, you know, he's had a weird career, but like, I just don't know if drafting two samey players 2 years in a row serves either player. Cause we always say, like, okay, you can't make picks with the sunk cost fallacy in mind, you know, like you can't,
right?
If you don't think Sexton's a point guard, you can't avoid a point guard just because you took Sexton or whatever, you know, like that's what the pro best player available would tell you. But like, what they're not really thinking about is those guys are gonna have to play together next year, and is one gonna stifle the development of the other, or both, you know? It just makes me, it kind of gives me the willies. And it's, if I thought Morant was on his own second tier, a full tier above the other wings in this class, that just makes so much more sense for the Cavs, who have been pretty wing starved all year. It just, you know, I would get it, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. I think I'd take like five players ahead of Morant right now.
I would too. And if I'm the 2010-2011 Cavs with absolutely nobody worth building around on the roster, I would still not take Morant. Like, it's, I
that makes at least more sense to me. I just don't think it makes sense for this Cavs team.
Right. Like, I'd be okay with even Coby White ahead of them. But I think the main thing is, at some point, I would like to be okay with defense. Like, we're on a few years in a row, and I don't think Mike Lombardi is going to be back next year. But I just don't think that your path to building a competent defense in the future is John Moran and Colin Sexton. I just don't see how you can do that with that undersized of a backcourt. And I honestly think that there's better players available. And my philosophy is still kind of, if Zion, RJ, and Culver are off the board, I'm calling Portland and I'm trying to find out what could get done for CJ McCollum. I'm kind of shopping that pick at that point to either trade back or consolidate some assets and add a player there.
Hell yeah, brother. Let's just get a fun team. Also, love that you said you wanted to be good at defense someday and then said you wanted to trade for CJ McCollum.
Well,
my guy.
To clarify, at that point, I'm kind of resigning myself to saying, okay, it's just not going to happen. Let's go in on offense. Let's get a guy. Let's get the local guy in here. Folks, this time of year can be stressful enough as it is. You got your March Madness bracket. It's probably on life support, but just because that's stressful doesn't mean the rest of your life should be stressful, and it doesn't mean that getting life insurance should be stressful. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At getethos.com, there are no medical examinations for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives either. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing that you've taken steps to protect your family and in most cases with Ethos, you have the peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day. No hidden fees. Carter, that's less than a cup of coffee.
Less than a cup of coffee a day. Wow.
Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit a complete application in just minutes. Go to ethos.com. That's ETHOS. GetEthos.com. GetEthos.com. But obviously, that kind of team building philosophy is assuming that Kevin Love is going to be here in part of the future. And I know that's a topic David had mentioned. You want to talk about it. I wanted to talk about it with David because we did have disagreements over the Kevin Love extension. And I guess the best place to start off there is just wondering, David, has anything happened this season that's kind of changed your opinion on it? Or are you still of the opinion that we got to move him to try to add more assets and rebuild more traditionally?
Yeah, I mean, I think you win. Like, you were right. Like, the way that it's worked out has been very, very good. But if Kevin Love doesn't get hurt, I think it's possible that this season looks a lot different and maybe not in a good way, right? Like,
right.
If we were on our way to the eighth seed, you know, maybe if Kevin Love's back, you know, Colin Sexton starts looking better a month earlier, you know, or a month or two earlier.
Right.
But
and Teddy Osmond's played a lot better with him as well.
Yeah. So I think, you know, maybe the way that we would be feeling right now, you know, we'd have more wins, right? Maybe 30 wins. Like, I don't know what the answer to that is.
Mm-hmm.
But we would be, you know, really talking ourselves into the new lottery helping us because we'd be, you know, at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Or, you know, maybe we'd be talking ourselves into, you know,
Let's make a playoff run and hope the Raptors choke again.
We always play Toronto tough. You know, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know. But
interesting sentence. I loved that.
That's my point. Like, so I think like the way that it's worked out, we'd still have a really good shot at winning the lottery. And we've gotten to see some steps forward. And I think, you know, if he stays healthy for, you know, the remaining few games of the season, you know, maybe Kevin Love has some trade value. So, like, if they, you know, because part of my argument was if you give him this monster deal, you know, maybe he doesn't really have that much trade value. But I think he's showing he's still, you know, a relevant player. And you know what? The Lakers might be that desperate. So, like, I mean, I don't know. But I think right now I would hope that Kevin Love's back. And that's, again, sort of another argument for you. But I think that if he stays healthy, things get a lot more convoluted. So
I think that an interesting way to pivot from here is kind of to a different point that Justin and I have disagreed on, which is how fun this season has been. Mm-hmm. Justin definitely thinks this season has been a pretty fun season, pretty good time. But I actually saw something from you, David, on Twitter recently that it actually got me thinking. You kind of said this has been a pretty perfect season for the Cavs.
Oh yeah, that's not
after all, right?
A different word.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. To clarify. Well, yes. Go ahead.
Let me lay out the point, because in a lot of ways, I actually do think it's been kind of a perfect season for the Cavs. Like, you know, Love still looks like a player, but he missed enough time to get them a really good pick. Almost certainly. Sexton is showing flashes and kind of fought through the morass to end up like a decent looking player on the other side. Jetty looks pretty solid. They unloaded their vets for good assets. And I actually agree that in a lot of ways, this is the season that the Cavs needed to have. But I don't think it's been fun. I just think it's been an important dose of medicine. It's like we took the medicine of, you know, Jaren Blossom game and Jalen Jones, and now we're going to start feeling a little bit better. Your
right.
thoughts, Justin?
Well, to clarify, I think what this season has been is it's been a little more stress-free, in my opinion. And that was my big thing with last year, is there just was always this cloud over the season. And I, even when they were winning 16 games in a row early in the year, that wasn't really a whole lot of fun. I think the most fun was right after the trade deadline, when those guys were playing really well and before the second round of injuries kind of kicked in. But the highs have been fun this year. But I think the way David said it is right, that it's just kind of been perfect for the Cavs. And when I had written about this year, or written prior to the extension of Kevin Love, that that they should give him an extension, what I was illustrating in that article and what I was trying to say the Cavs should sell him on is basically what they did this year, which is, hey, if you're banged up at all, we're going to rest you. If you're playing, you're only playing 28 minutes a game, and it's going to be with Jetty and Sexton. We're going to trade off the veterans. We're going to make those young guys make mistakes. And if we're ahead of the curve and Sexton and Jetty just blossom and turn into kind of core players, then with the new lottery odds, we're still going to have a shot at a guy that matters. And it doesn't matter that we're getting those extra wins. And I think that's kind of been what Love has bought into. In the interview with Jason Lloyd, he kind of alluded to, hey, I know that this has been what's best for the team. And I'm sure that the Cavs held him out a little longer than they needed to. And I think they've done the same thing with Tristan. And it's put themselves in a good position this year. This is probably the best position they could have been in. In all likelihood, they're going to have the highest possible odds at getting a top four pick. And from there, it's just, we just kind of have to hope for lottery luck and that whoever they get in the draft is someone that fits into the culture.
All right, Justin, have you softened at all on the idea of potentially still using Love as in a trade?
No, I think it would be irresponsible if you weren't listening to offers for Love.
Sure, but I'm saying actually doing it.
I would.
The more interesting thing is actually looking to trade him for future assets.
Let's put it this way. Let's say the Pelicans aren't interested in trading for Anthony Davis, but they basically have commitments from Kyrie and KD. If they're looking to sell off the pick because it fell back to five or something like that, I would trade Kevin Love. If there is a former first round pick that I really believe in and the team's also willing to give up future assets, I would trade Kevin Love for that. But
Justin,
it would need to be something.
Anthony Bennett's on the Agua Caliente Clippers. not the main team. They can just sign him whenever.
Did I say Anthony Bennett instead of Anthony Davis?
No, but you just said a former number one pick becomes available.
Oh, I meant former first round pick.
But I'm aware, but let me get my fucking jokes off. Jeez.
All right. But yeah, I mean, it would need to be something of value. Like, it would need to be someone that's actually, that you believe could have the potential to be a cornerstone of the team, not just a second round pick and cap space. Because I think the culture of the locker room has been healthier than it's been in a really long time. And I think Kevin Love plays a role in that. And I think we've seen that his presence there is helping out. It's helping the development. And I'm just so scarred from the mistakes of the past with the Cavs that I want to avoid that at all costs.
David, what's the least you would trade Kevin Love for?
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's kind of funny, like the places that make most sense for a Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson trade are like either Kyrie in New York or LeBron in LA.
Yep. it's almost like we built a good team that fits well together before.
Yeah, like if New York ended up with Kyrie and KD, like I feel like Tristan Thompson would make a lot of sense there.
Yeah.
And it would not surprise me if LeBron this summer was kind of like, I need Tristan or Kevin here as a grown up in the room that like I know can play, and like Tristan would sort of help them with, you know, defensively, obviously, maybe. But so I just think that's kind of funny. The hypothetical, if I found out that the Cavs could have had the fifth pick in the draft for Kevin Love and they said no, that would not.
You'd lose your damn mind.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. I don't see that happening.
But it feels like a decent line of demarcation to some extent. Like, I don't really care about the ninth pick in the draft for Kevin Love.
It'd be close for me.
Ninth, honestly, I'd be considering it as well.
I'm just not interested. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just, maybe I just lost like that, that ability to project. I think of the three of us, I'm the most future or the most present based in my interest in the team. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really care about 3 years down the line right now. I just can't Adam giving a shit about, you know, like, and I don't think I'm right. It's just the way I feel, you know, of like, yeah, of the way I want my team to behave.
Right.
I want to have a good time when I watch my team right now.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, fair.
So but I'm out. No way.
The frame that I keep going back to and I have all year is, do they have a top 20 NBA player right now? No.
They do not.
Do they have a top 100?
Yeah.
Right. Outside of love, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think Tristan for a little while this year was playing like a top 50 player.
Yeah.
But do no, the answer is no, they do not have a top 20 player. Do they have somebody who projects as a top 20 player? I would say no. So, like, you know, until they do, you know, what are we doing here? So,
no, I get that.
So that's kind of, you know, getting as many bites at the apple as possible, I guess.
I think that's the way, more than anything, that the title freed me up. I'm less title obsessed than I used to be. Do you feel less title obsessed than you used to be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, but that's why I just want a fun team to watch. That likes each other and plays hard for each other and tries to win.
But
games,
I will say the title made it so that I don't need that. But also, like, it also really devalued what becoming the Hawks.
Maybe that'll be the way I feel when we get there. That's an interesting thought.
See, my hope is still kind of that we go more the way of, and this is another franchise that we've mocked a lot, but like the Raptors, where they were a 3-4 seed for a while. They did well with draft and development later in the draft. Like flipping Grievous Vasquez, for example, for a later pick from Milwaukee that turned into OG Anunoby. Like that helps. And that's what I would kind of hope. Like, to me, my big dream is still that you end up with a wing, either Culver or RJ, and they slot alongside Sexton, Jetty, Love, and Tristan. And then you're basically just out there shopping your expirings for guys that can help out and fill out the roster. And maybe you hit on another guy with the Houston first round pick. Maybe you flip some of those guys for first round picks. We got the first round pick from Milwaukee, which if Giannis stays, that pick is going to convert. And it seems very possible that that's going to be the double draft with high schoolers being able to enter directly. So that's going to be a deeper draft than normal. I just think if you value building a culture and you start hitting with those later picks and you develop guys and maximize them, I think that can be somewhat entertaining. And then at some point you make a move like Toronto did, where you're saying, okay, we're consolidating, we're going in, we're trading for a Kawhi Leonard, because that has to be the route for the Cavs, because we're not going to be a major free agent player. You just have to develop well, develop assets, and hopefully you're able to cash in at some point.
I have a question about Kevin Love. Because we always talk about the people who the Warriors hurt, whose legacies the Warriors kind of robbed. Like, we talk about how the Cavs, you know, got their chance at title stolen because the Warriors, you know, became what they became. Like, this Cavs second LeBron era could have been even greater. We talk about the other teams in the West that they beat that, you know, kind of fell by the wayside or are going to fall by the wayside, like the Rockets. You know, I don't think anyone really thinks the Rockets are going to win a title. Has anyone been hurt more in their legacy than Kevin Love in a weird way? Like, Kevin Love is good against 29 teams. And like, every time anyone talks about him as a trade target, they're like, yeah, but like, we all kind of know he can't help a good team.
Which is frustrating because he played pretty well against the Warriors in the last two finals.
Yeah, but even like, you know, like I think we can all acknowledge that like he had defensive limitations against that team. Like,
no,
you know,
not
they presented problems that like that the Cavs struggled to accommodate. But like against every other team, he was so good. And I just feel like he's kind of gotten a raw deal because of a couple finals.
No, that, for sure.
I just don't understand why we think he can't help. Like, I'm just very interested to see what how reputations are affected in a post-KD Warriors world.
But I will say, I think a lot of teams, or maybe not a lot, but there are definitely organizations that don't are not in the title or bust model like you are, Carter. They've, you know, like I'm thinking of the Pacers, but I think Oklahoma City is probably kind of close to that. So I think there are teams that would value Kevin, even if they didn't think that he would put them over the top against the Warriors.
Right.
Just in terms of his value.
Yeah. I just am kind of sad for him that like somehow has become his thing when he,
and I think some of it though, I think some of it's due to playing alongside LeBron too.
Yeah, like, sure.
I think that just minimizes the impact of some players. And like he got the Bosch treatment without having the Bosch Toronto run, which I mean, he was probably as good in Minnesota for that stretch. And that was actually a really good team that just missed playoffs in a very tough West. But man, it's just,
I still think it's different because Bosch got shit on for a couple of years and then rehabbed his value during their two title wins. Like everyone right, but, then agreed
and he was also able to play defense at the five.
That's what it is the defense and not playing against a team that ruined him. Yeah. Or ruined the perception of him.
Yeah, for sure. Kevin Love was considered he was coming off a season where people were talking about him like he was a top five NBA player, and he was coming off an Olympics where people were talking about him as the X factor.
A lot of people said Kyrie was definitely the third best player on the Cavs.
I think that was the intention going into the year. I anticipated it as a Kyrie fan that he was going to be the third guy. LeBron came back because they had a deal lined up for Kevin Love, and Kevin Love was going to be the number two. But just with two ball-dominant guys on the perimeter, that was just never going to be the case. And their offense was better maximized playing through Kyrie and LeBron. But no, Kevin Love was supposed to be the number two there. And I think that gets forgotten after the fact.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I am interested to see players that have, you know, maybe one exploitable flaw become interesting again in the post-Warriors dynasty world. Because, like, there's just this very single-minded way and, like, they've really flattened the discourse in a lot of spots just by like, well, no one can beat them. And that player, he can't play in a competitive. Like every time we say this guy can't hold up in the playoffs, it almost 98% of the time means he can't hang with he can't play against the Warriors.
Right. No, that's exactly what it is.
That bothers me a little bit. It's kind of a bummer to me.
I'm very ready for the conversation around basketball to shift away from that. And
league's gonna be so good next year. I'm so confident in this.
I've said this a million times, but I really do think that once that bar gets lowered, I just think you see less of players teaming up because hey, now two stars in a roster that's built well around them can compete for a championship. Players don't have to go out of their way to create super teams to even have a shot at stealing a series if things break right. It's going to be really, really interesting. And I think the fact that the Warriors are as good as they've been has kind of taken away from the fact that this is probably the deepest the league has been. And I think once the Warriors are brought back to everyone else's level, then, hey, it's going to open up a lot of opportunities.
Trying to figure out how good the Warriors would be next year if they just bring everyone back, but no. KD. Like, what does that mean? Because they'd
be really motivated.
They're going to be motivated, but like a big part of that Warriors team was like this combination of all these perfect storm elements coming together. And I just wonder if it's going to be like a depressing like a depressing reunion tour for a band, you know, that's a little past their prime, you know, lead singer can't hit the heights he used to.
Oh man, it'd be a real shame to see the Warriors not catch a break.
I'm not going to be depressed about it, but I think it's going to, I'm wondering, because I think there's a little bit of like the Warriors fan base that's like kind of deep down in their heart. They're like, oh yeah, we're going to play the way we used to.
Well, yeah, we all follow Sam and Andy. We know that that's how they feel. Anyways, David, really do appreciate you coming on. Guys, make sure that you are subscribing to the Fear the Sword feed. We've already told you to subscribe to it for Thick Jack Frames, but David is also hosting The Bottom on the same feed.
The Bottom!
More good analysis, change of opinion, which I think is needed, because if you're only listening to us, you're only getting one voice, and we like our own little echo chamber, and I like the sound of my own voice, so it is good to get other perspectives, and David is one of the best at taking a step back and bringing just an objective view to everything. So really do appreciate you coming on, David. Appreciate our listeners. Remember, support the show. The best way to do that is by subscribing, leave a rating, leave a review. Do the same thing on the Fear the Sword feed. Help out the mother site. And we will talk to you later on in this week. And until next time, go Cavs.